I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
J.D. Salinger is still amazingly well-known, considering he hasn't written a book in decades. His fame rests mostly on his magnum opus, The Catcher in the Rye. It tells the story of a disaffected teenager named Holden Caulfield, who wanders through New York City fending off phonies and trying to catch up with his little sister.
Catcher in the Rye made a huge impression on the world, still sells around 250,000 copies a year. But in the 60s, Salinger published his last piece. The story goes that he holed up in the woods of New England, squirreling away his daily writings in a vault away from the eyes of the world.
Shane Salerno directed the film Salinger and co-authored a book by that same name with David Shields. The film premiered this month in Telluride, Colorado. Shane, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I want to start out by listening to a little bit of the film. This is from the trailer for Salinger.
The publication of Catcher in the Rye in 1951 was a revolution.
There had not been a voice like that.
When you're a kid and you read Catcher in the Rye, you're just like, oh my God, somebody gets it.
I remember that being the first book you take with you.
It is a phenomenon. How many millions and millions came to that book?
The great mystery is why he stopped.
Salinger was a national story, a shooting star.
At the height of that success, he disappears. He became the Howard Hughes of his day.
And that, a clip from your new documentary, Salinger. A lot of reach there. You've got a lot of people talking there. You may not have recognized the voices of John Cusack, Edward Norton, and Martin Sheen, just to name a few. People really care about Salinger to this day. And Shane, I gather you're no exception. You've been working on this film since 2003. And is it fair to say you had an obsession with J.D. Salinger?
Well, it didn't start with an obsession. It started with a passion, but it became an obsession. In my house when I was a kid, J.D. Salinger was a very big deal. And my mom deeply loved Salinger and would always talk about him. And I was turned on to his work very young, and I read everything. And I said to her one day, I said, okay, what's next? You know, where's the new Salinger book? And she said, there's no more books. You've read everything. I said, what do you mean? Did he die? And, you know, this is before Google and everything, you know. And she said, no, he disappeared. And he stopped writing, and I was just hooked. I mean, it was like the greatest thing you could tell a teenage boy is that, you know, he's like literary Bigfoot. And so I was really fascinated by Salinger. And when I became older and started to research this project, I started to find these amazing details. I started to find that J.D. Salinger landed on D-Day. That J.D. Salinger lost the love of his life to Charlie Chaplin, that J.D. Salinger was in a mental institution because he was so traumatized by his experience in World War II.
And that's a good place to jump in and talk about the war in J.D. Salinger because, you know, at first blush, you look at Catcher in the Rye, and this is a story of a prep school kid, and he swears a lot, at least swears a lot for the day. But in your context, there's a different story. What's the case to be made that Catcher in the Rye is actually a war novel?
Well, throughout the book, there are references to war. The loss of innocence that's discussed throughout the book is specifically in reference to what Salinger saw in World War II. If it wasn't for World War II, we would have never heard the name J.D. Salinger. And he admitted that. I mean, he said everything that he wrote before that were the gaucheries of his youth. All the work for which we know and love Salinger were written after the war. Some kind of extraordinary transformative trauma happened. He went into World War II as a Park Avenue rich kid and who had never suffered. And he came out of World War II, the J.D. Salinger that we know today, with that incredible singular voice of pain. And all of the nine stories are all impacted by his experience in World War II. It's really the ghost in the machine of all of his work.
And that's part of the big mystery here in what happened in his life. What did you find out that did happen to him during World War II?
Well, like I said, he participated in some of the bloodiest battles of that war, including the Battle of the Bulge, the Battle of the Hurricane Forest. At the end of the war, he walked into a concentration camp, a sub-camp of Dachau. And we argue very passionately in the film and in the book that he walked into that concentration camp and never walked out. What he said to his family and to his friends was that you never get the smell of burning flesh out of your nostrils no matter how long you live. And so this was a deeply traumatizing experience for him. He checked himself into a mental institution very soon thereafter. And then he came out of that mental institution and did something that no one else would do. He signed back up for more, and he participated in the denazification of Germany. people.
And so how did he emerge from that? I mean, it sounds like his mental health was deteriorating because of what he'd been through, understandably, but then he goes back in. Why did he do that?
Well, he wanted to see the people that did these horrible crimes pay, but as only happened in a J.D. Salinger story, he fell in love with a Gestapo agent, a German, married her, and then snuck her back to the United States and brought her home to his parents' Jewish Park Avenue household. So you can imagine how, you know, that was not your average day in the Salinger household.
Wow.
So he really lived what he wrote, and all of the stories are autobiographical in one way or another. Catcher in the Rye is really the story of his childhood. He said, you know, there was a great deal about me and Holden, and it was a great relief telling people about it. Those were his feelings. There's a signature scene in Catcher in the Rye where he says, if there's another war, I'm going to climb on top of the bomb and ride it all the way down. And that's not only a reference to his own experiences and his feelings about the futility of war, but it's also a scene that became very famous years later in Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove.
And yet he drops off the radar after the success of Catcher in the Rye in 1965. And you know, he hadn't done publicity before, but this book was a hit. So why did he drop out of the public life?
One of the things that we reveal in the book is that there were two demarcation points in Salinger's life. The first was World War II. The second was religion. One of the least explored areas of J.D. Salinger's life is J.D. Salinger's complete devotion to the Vedanta religion. He had tried Christianity and Judaism and self-realization and a number of other religions, but he settled on the Vedanta religion. And this religion has two of the four sort of rules of the religion pertain to Salinger's life. The third one is withdrawing from society, which Salinger did in 1965. And the fourth is the renunciation of the world. And J.D. Salinger's last words, which were issued by his family after he died, was, I am in this world, but not of it. What no one's really explored, and we spend a great deal of time in the book discussing this and in the film, is J.D. Salinger's desperate need for religion. He was so traumatized by war that he sought religion as a cure. The problem is that the religion fundamentally altered his work. It actually made his work far less popular because it was filled with too much theology. By the time he gets to his last published story in 1965, he's not writing anymore, he's preaching. And people didn't want that. And J.D. Salinger stepping away from the world at the height of his fame. I mean, nobody has ever, there's no precedent in history for what he did, is rooted in his religion. And if you can imagine, for the last 45 years, he's been writing every single day until his death. And that's an extraordinary event. I mean, if you can imagine Steven Spielberg making movies only for himself for 45 years, and then, you know, upon his death, planning to release them, it would be pretty extraordinary. And that's what the world has to wait for now. More Salinger stories, which will be coming out in a few years.
The book is thick. We can't possibly get to all of it. And there are some things in there that may shock Salinger fans, including his relationship with teenage girls. We don't have time to talk about that. But I guess the big question that remains is, in our last minute or so here, what about all that writing? Are we going to get to see it, all these years that he's been writing?
You will get to see it. The estate will be publishing that work in irregular installments between 2015 and 2020. That's a piece of information that had never been revealed. We uncovered it after, you know, spending a decade making this film and writing this book. I was 30 when I started, 40 when I finished. I don't recommend that. We originally had a budget of $300,000, and I ended up spending $2 million of my own money to tell this story. And Salinger's life is an extraordinary life. Whether you're a fan of Salinger's or not, his life is an extraordinary life, and is in many ways more relevant today than when his work was at its height.
All right, we're going to leave it there. But Shane, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We were just talking to Shane Salerno. He directed the biopic Salinger and co-authored a book by the same name. He's collaborated with filmmakers Oliver Stone and Michael Bay, and recently agreed to write a new Avatar script.